Warning, this episode contains brain food that will lead to improved emotional and social intelligence. Thanks for tuning in to Harvesting Happiness today for a healthy serving of consciously prepared brain food. This is Lisa Cypress-Kamen, your host. For more than 13 years, I've been handcrafting these sound ideas for better well-being. Each week, I love spotlighting diverse thinkers and doers who are contemporary trendsetters and change agents, devoting their lives to creating a better world in which to live. I invite you to listen up and change the way you think about human happiness. Our award-winning content is fresh, optimistic, and purpose-driven media that promotes well-being from the inside out. Alrighty then, let's dive in. This episode offers psychosocial education designed to inspire and motivate our listeners. The information provided does not constitute a therapeutic relationship nor a substitute for professional mental health care. If you are experiencing a mental health crisis, call 911, go to your nearest emergency room, or for listeners in the United States, text 988 for the National Suicide and Crisis Lifeline. Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening, wherever you are. Thanks for joining me on today's show, where we will be talking about getting it on, sexual expression at any age and stage of life, with my guest, Dr. Justin Garcia. He is the executive director of the Kinsey Institute and Ruth Hall's Professor of Gender Studies at Indiana University, Bloomington. An award-winning researcher and educator, Dr. Garcia's research focuses on people's romantic and sexual lives throughout the life course, especially on integrative biopsychosocial models of variation in courtship, intimacy, and sexual behavior. Dr. Garcia has co-authored over 100 academic articles and book chapters and is co-author of Evolution and Human Sexual Behavior, published by Harvard University Press. Also, since 2010, he has been the scientific advisor to the world's largest relationship company, Match.com. Justin, I am so happy, truly happy that you're here with me today.
Thanks so much. Thanks for having me, Lisa. I'm thrilled to be with you and your listeners. Thank you so much.
Well, this is great because some of our younger listeners might not know much about the Kinsey Institute. Mm-hmm. When I was a youngin, it was pretty much the gold standard of where research was being conducted and the data was stored. Talk a little bit about the Kinsey Institute and the recent survey about sex after 60.
Sure, thank you. And I hope for many it still is the gold standard. It's the Institute was founded here at Indiana University in 1947. And Dr. Kinsey, who the founding director who the Institute is named after, it really represents what should be the best of university life. He was asked to team teach the marriage course at the time, the sexual hygiene course in 1938. And he did the reproductive unit. Kinsey was a biologist. And there were so many questions from students, so many questions about sexuality and sex that he couldn't answer and that they couldn't find answers anywhere in the textbooks. That's why he conducted one of the most ambitious studies ever on human sexuality, 18,000 in-person interviews that lasted 3 to 18 hours.
Wow.
Exactly. So the two Kinsey, what are known as the Kinsey reports in 1947 and 1953, that's what started the legacy here of boldly exploring human sexuality and relationships in all sorts of different dimensions, using different disciplines. So you can run up and down our halls and there's a historian and a neuroscientist and a biologist and a psychologist. So everyone brings their own disciplinary expertise and theories and methods to study aspects together, to study aspects of sexuality and relationships. So it's a really remarkable place.
It sounds super exciting. I mean, no pun intended. I mean, it really is. It's very interesting. I mean, we humans, we're driven by pleasure, right? Like, yeah. We are pleasure-seeking missiles, truly.
Yeah, and all over the world, right? Some of our colleagues who are anthropologists will often look at examples for different societies. And sex has different roles in different cultures, but there's its ties to relationship dynamics and pleasure and its impacts on our psychological well-being have been documented all over the world. Now, there are certain places that prioritize sex for reproduction more or less than others. I can think of some great work done by colleagues of mine who looked at the Aka and Nagunda tribes in Africa. And in one of their ethnographies, they said, well, the men look at sex as work, but they say it's arguably much more pleasant than daytime work. And so we, even in societies that we see that variation, we recognize that people seek out human connection. We seek out love and sex in every corner of the globe and as far back as historians have information.
And not to mention in so many different ways. You know, yeah. I think that it's really important to like validate and normalize. There's no right or wrong way, right? It's like you mentioned mm-hmm. before we got started. It's like kind of whatever works.
Yeah, exactly. And it's I love that you're bringing this up, Lisa, because there's so much variation for people in terms of what is a sexual event for them or what's a pleasurable sexual event for them. And we know from our studies and others that there's so much variation in different behaviors people will engage in. And sometimes they're experiments and they're experiences. So a lot of times people will try something, or maybe you're someone who will try anything twice, and that you'll add behaviors to your repertoire. But actually, one of our great findings from our COVID studies we did here, we did a big project on the impact of COVID on romantic and sexual relationships, was that about 1 in 5 people tried something new in their sexual life during COVID. So overall, sexual frequency declined for most people, both in the US and worldwide in our samples, but people were trying something new. And for many people, it was the first time that they ever turned to their partner and said, "Hey, tell me about a sexual fantasy. What is something we've never done?" And I think that's a remarkable statement about all of our intimate lives, that it took a global pandemic and lockdowns for so many people to turn to a partner and say, "Hey, what's something we've never tried before? You want to give it a whirl?" And in fact, most people found their relationships got better in the pandemic, despite all the stress.
Interesting.
Again, I think impacting the power of our romantic and sexual lives to influence our mood and our satisfaction and in our views on life.
Well, I think that, you know, in the pandemic, many of us realized that we had to sort of lean in and turn towards one another because we were limited, right, in the outside world, how we could engage in the outside world. And I'm really glad to hear about this, you know, trying something new and different. But yeah, we don't need a pandemic to do that. I think that's
exactly,
the point of this conversation.
Exactly. That we have these moments in all of our lives that we can be talking openly about what is it that interests you? Are there things... I mean, I think it's a great question that for people, if you're in a relationship, you know, turn to your partner and say, "Is there anything we've never talked about in our intimate life? Are there things you've always wanted to try?" And if you're single too, it's not all of that is partnered sexual experiences. A lot of it are things people are doing on their own.
I think that's an important point to talk about, right? To elaborate on the fact that exploring one's sexuality need not be tied to a partner. And in fact, if you can learn how to satisfy yourself and learn about your own body, arguably you would have a more satisfying sex life when partnered.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And sometimes find partners in unexpected places. I'm in our study, in our Singles in America study that we do with Match here at the Kinsey Institute with my colleagues, Helen Fisher and Amanda Gesselman, we found that 1 in 4 single people had had sex with a non-romantic roommate during the pandemic. So sometimes there's opportunity right under our noses.
When I was a kid, we called that friends with benefits.
Yeah. The kids still call it friends with benefits.
Yeah.
That's right.
Like no attachment. I mean, it's good, you know, but we're not tied.
Yeah. And sometimes it can turn into, it's an interesting way that, as you know, Lisa, as we were talking about earlier in my career, I wrote more about hookup culture, particularly among young people, college students, and what we call emerging adults. And we found that many had used hookups or friends with benefits as a way to start a relationship. And it's not always the best or the most successful way to find dates. But for a lot of people, it was, I mean, you learn an awful lot about someone when you have sex with them. Are they funny? Are they hygienic? Are they caring? Can you tolerate them? So for some people, it works.
But I think the hookup culture is very much a part of what's going on college campuses today. Is that accurate?
Yes, it is. We're just starting to see in some of our data that there had been over the last, I'd say about 2 decades, we had seen this shift that in the United States in particular, age at first marriage is getting pushed back. People are getting married later than ever. They're having their first kid, if they have kids at all, at later ages. So there was this, and at the same time, puberty was getting younger. So there was this unprecedented age gap that people were available for romantic and sexual exploration and experience. And what we found was, and what we continue to find is that for many people, there's an interest in these more casual encounters, hookups, friends with benefits, situationships, all sorts of different terms, which all mean different
situationships.
Things.
I like
to
that.
People.
I'm going to use that one.
Yeah, it's a good one. I like that. When I first heard that one, I was actually a journalist who told me, they said, are you familiar with this? I said, no, but I'm going to go research it right now.
Yeah, that's a good, that really is a good one. And not just for sexuality. I mean, just situationships. I like
that. Yeah, that it's sort of, it's, you know, there's some, that what it really is that the details aren't ironed out. And for many young people, releasing from some of those expectations of what are we exactly? Are we a couple? Are we exclusive? Are we boyfriend, girlfriend, girlfriend, girlfriend? You know, whatever titles we want to use, that these more casual interactions release from some of those expectations and pressure. And as people get older, what we see in the data is there's more interest in sort of, well, now it's time to clarify that. I'm at a point in my life, I want more clarity. And that's what we see in our studies of older people as well, that as we age, people want more and more clarity in what they're doing, and they're more sure of what it is that they want and don't want in their romantic and sexual life.
I like that. I second that. Let's talk a little bit about what is sexually trending, because I would think in the research that Kinsey has done over these vast decades that there may be a shift in what people like.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we're seeing all sorts of different trends. I love that you bring this up, because it's a reminder that for each generation, there's different things that we think are exciting and novel. And one example I'll use, there's been a real uptick in interest on polyamory, which by definition is plural love. Poly is plural, amory love. So this idea of multiple romantic partners. And for young people today, and we see it on dating apps too, a lot of people will put in their app if they are polyamorous, if they're open to polyamory. And it's really one of multiple forms of what we call consensual non-monogamy or negotiated non-monogamy, that people will have relationship structures that there's more than one partner. And for some people, it's a primary romantic bond, but you're open to other sexual partners. And for some people, it's that you have many romantic bonds, some you have many sexual partners. We found in one of our published studies that about 1 in 5 Americans have at some point had a consensually non-monogamous relationship. And that number seems to be on the rise. More people are talking about it. They're open to it. Now, that's not totally different. If you talk to someone who was young in the 60s, in the 70s, there was swinging, there was open relationships. But it's a new trend in terms of how it's understood and how it's culturally experienced and the labels put around it and the sort of bumpers put around it for people. So we're seeing a lot of interest in that, both in research and in real practice that people are talking about it.
Interesting. I remember I was watching a TV series. Billions. We're going to take a break in a minute, but this is interesting. Sure. And I don't know if you've seen Billions, and our listeners may or may not have watched it, but there is a lot of BDSM in there, which is kind of weird because the character who's into this is the district attorney for New York. And so it's like, wow, like whose mind thought of this? And I know that there is a lot of interest in this and there's nothing wrong with it, but it was a little eye-opening for a more mature person to see this on, not, I don't know if I call it family TV, but certainly primetime series.
Yeah. And for those who don't know BDSM, it stands for bondage, dominance, sadomasochism, masochism. And it's really about power play for many people. And you're right. There's been a lot of interest. We did a study with my colleague, Michelle Druin, and several others looking at unintended harm that can happen in BDSM, and that people will sometimes have marks. It might look like they have strangulation and choke marks or bruises or other injuries that can happen. For people who practice BDSM, there's often rules. There's often you have a safe word. We talk about what we're open to doing. It's rough sex play, often kind of turned up a notch. But people often will hear about it. Maybe you watch 50 Shades of Grey. You want to experience it, but they don't necessarily put in those parameters about safe words. And there's been a lot of litigation over people of getting injured in sex or saying, well, this went too far. And I think as a researcher and educator, it really reminds me, well, if we can encourage people to say, there's nothing wrong with wanting to try that, but have a good conversation with your partner first of saying like, are we going to choke? Are we going to be rough? Or what are you okay with? What are you not? What's our safe word? When do we stop? That it reminds us that people have lots of diverse interests. And it's, if we can be honest and upfront with it, then everyone benefits.
And no is a complete sentence. I think I'm quoting Jane Fonda.
That's right.
On that one.
That's right. Yeah. And we need to remember that and teach that, particularly to young people as they start to uncover their sexual selves, that it's okay to have limits. Other people have limits. You need to hear those limits.
Let's take a pause. And when we come back, we will continue the conversation with Dr. Justin Garcia. To learn more about Justin's work and that of his colleagues, please go to thekinseyinstitute.org. Once again, that's thekinseyinstitute.org. You can also connect on X at Kinsey Institute and on Instagram at Dr. Justin Garcia and at Kinsey Institute. Here comes the pause. We'll be right back. Wait. Before we pause, let's chat about the importance of passion and pleasure at home, because research has proven that happiness and sex kind of go together. I know. Sometimes it's hard to feel amorous and in the mood when life demands so much of us and there is so little precious time, not to mention the hormonal shifts that come with each life stage. Whether it's work, kids, elder care, or other important obligations, finding the time and headspace to get it on can be a challenge. If you're anything like me, distractions, long-term relationship status, familiarity, and natural aging can all contribute to a diminished sex drive. The good news is that with a little curiosity, interest, and effort, a better and more fulfilling sex life can be yours at any age or stage of life. Whether you are wanting more intimacy or wanting to explore new erotic domains, today's sponsor, Beducated, created a shame-free, sex-positive online platform that has helped tens of thousands of people find their sexual happiness. Beducated has more than 100 online sex and relationship courses led by the world's top experts that will help you master new techniques, reignite the spark, and enjoy more sex with greater confidence and new depths of pleasure. I found the Sex After Menopause online course offered eye-opening strategies to help thrive in sexuality beyond the change. No matter your age, gender, sexual orientation, relationship status, or sexual experience, Beducated is a safe and discreet, judgment-free space for personal exploration and growth. Did you know that May is Masturbation Month? Go ahead, do it yourself and celebrate. Rediscover how at beducate.me/happiness. Spice up your sex life today at beducate.me/happiness. And use code HAPPINESS to get 50% off the yearly pass. You can even test the waters with a free 24-hour trial. If you're not satisfied, there is a 14-day risk-free money-back guarantee. That's beducate.me/happiness. Code HAPPINESS. Now let's take that pause. Each day, we have the intellectual freedom to be happy or the liberty to be miserable, regardless of external circumstance. If you or someone you know is struggling with mental health, seek support, because good psychological health is vital in the achievement of a happy and satisfying life. Visit harvestinghappiness.com for psychosocial educational resources to boost emotional and social intelligence. Like what you hear on Harvesting Happiness? Sharing is caring. Pay it forward by spreading the word to your community and through social media. Subscribe, listen, and share hundreds of downloadable episodes from wherever you get your podcasts. Connect with and follow us on most social media channels. And we're back, continuing the conversation with my guest today, Dr. Justin Garcia, Executive Director of the Kinsey Institute. We're talking about getting it on, sexual expression at any age and stage of life. Let's get back to it. Justin, let's talk about that recent Kinsey Institute survey about sex after 60. We touched upon it like for a smidge in the first segment, but I want to circle back to it because I am about to be in that category. Heaven help me.
Well, there's a lot of good news we have for you and for everyone else. We've been looking at questions of aging and sexuality, the Kinsey Institute researchers, for some time, but we recently had quite a large study. We looked at several thousand women in the United States. And we first released our findings with Cosmo magazine, so folks can look up a special issue of Cosmo and Kinsey Institute Presents, The Sex After 60. And we had some really interesting findings. And one of the big takeaways, the reason I'm excited for you and for everyone else is when they hit 60, is what we find is that many people report that their sex life, it stays the same, the quality. We often measure satisfaction, relationship satisfaction, and sexual satisfaction. it's a sort of psychometrically validated measure. And what we find is a lot of people say it stays the same. And in fact, quite a few say it gets better. In our study, we asked people, looking back at your sex life over the past years, how would you say it compares now versus then? And quite a lot were telling us, well, my sex life is better in all sorts of ways, in part because they felt more empowered. They were a little bit more sure of what it is that they, what they enjoy, what they like, what they know. Specifically, of those that are sexually active, 13% said, oh, actually, my sex life, I enjoy it more now. But in terms of their satisfaction, 60% said, so 6 out of 10 said that the behaviors are different. So it's that for me to have a satisfying sexual experience, maybe I don't need penetrative intercourse. But things like eye gazing and deep kissing and cuddling and holding. So as we age, the behaviors we engage in our sexual events change. But that doesn't mean that the satisfaction decreases. In fact, people are saying it's the same and it's better in so many ways because they're doing things that we have long known are associated with pleasure and satisfaction.
No, I think you make a really good point about this. Like for those of us who have been in relationships of long duration, this I'm going to say I'm in a relationship for 15 years with the same man who I adore. And I do look at him with those same fresh eyes now that I did 15 years ago. And I also have to add the caveat, we dated in undergraduate school. So we had a little story then 100 years ago. But like, I still see that boy in him as a mature man. Like the sparkle is still there. We might not be having as the same quantity of sex, but certainly the quality is so much better and deep and rich and loving and kind, you know?
Yeah. And we change. And I love how you frame that and your vulnerability with it, Lisa. It's that we change, our bodies change, our wants change, our needs change. And you know, you get older and you hurt your back or your knee bothers you and you need to be in a different position.
Always the knees.
Always the knees.
We're skiers. It's always the knees.
Exactly. Skiers and runners. And, and that's okay. That's part of the human experience. But in fact, the beauty of relationships that fulfill us is that we navigate that together. Yeah. We figure it out. We go, okay, tuck the pillow under your knee, or we're going to do this, or we're going to. And it changes, and the frequency often changes. That's often biological, right? But although not for everyone, there's still many people over 70 who have sex daily.
God bless them.
I know. And what we do changes, but figuring that out together, weathering that together, I think is what's so exciting. And what's so interesting is that as we age, we found in our studies that people are in some ways less likely to settle in their dating life and in their sexual life, that they're a little bit, they know what works. And I think particularly for women with a menopausal transition, often what will happen as women go through menopause is their behaviors change because of what's happening physiologically, thinning of the vaginal wall, changes in estrogens, and that sex might be slower. It's less penetrative. But some of the behaviors are ones that are associated, that were always associated with pleasure and orgasm. So more foreplay, more heavy petting, more deep kissing. Turns out in our studies on passion in couples of all age of life, that those are the things that are associated with passion and long-term couples. But it takes until we get older that we really say, hey, this is what we're going to do. I'm prioritizing these behaviors, prioritizing our connection and figuring this out on my own and together, that I think is so amazing to watch how people can integrate that into their lives. And those that do, those that say, I'm going to take sex seriously, report really high levels of life satisfaction, sex satisfaction, relationship quality.
And happiness. I mean, there is a correlation between having a satisfying sex life and one's own subjective well-being.
Exactly. That's exactly right. And we know consensual sexual experiences have been associated with positive psychological and mental health, positive physical health. It gives you energy. It gives you a positive outlook. Particularly if it's tied to a romantic partner, it can often give you, has a lot of health benefits. A lot of research over the years has suggested that there's positive benefits of being in an intimate relationship, but also for many singles, also sexual experiences, whether it's with a partner or on your own, has positive psychological and physical benefits. Part of what it means to be human.
Yeah. Part of what it means to be human. And the idea that sex is good. It's good for us. Mm-hmm. It's good for our relationships. It's actually good for the planet, right? Like we were talking on the break, if we had more sex as humans on Earth, there would be less war.
Yeah.
We wouldn't be so agitated all the time, you know?
Yeah. And there's this idea that really this, for me as a researcher, I've worked with populations all over the country and all over the world in terms of different demographics and experiences and the pursuit of love and sex and the sort of working through the ups and downs of it and trying to find ways to cherish it. It is the great unifier. People all over the world understand the role of sex in our intimate lives. And try and find ways to sort of to make it work, to integrate it. And I think that so often people can get caught up in this idea that maybe there's something lurid about it or something dirty about it. And there are things complicated about sex. It could be, it could be noisy. It can be complex. It could be, you know, invoke all sorts of visceral responses. But its ties to pleasure and connection are really such a beautiful thing. And when we can use research and education to help people understand, you can find this in your life if you wish. There are some people who don't. We know that we increasingly know more about asexuality. But even then, even for people who are asexual, saying, you know, you have a right to figure out what it is you want and to pursue that, whatever that is. And we should do more to educate people so that they understand from curated, credible sources, what it is and what it isn't, and what's safe and what isn't, and to explore that in their own lives.
I love that you touch upon that about asexuality and the choice to not have sex or the lack of desire to have sex, and that that's not bad or wrong, right? It is actually a form of autonomy and expression.
Absolutely. It's part of the great diversity that exists in our intimate lives. And what we find is that some people who are asexual, they don't have interest in a partner, they don't have desire for sex with a partner. In one study, I think it was close to 50% occasionally masturbate. In other studies, some people who are asexual still have romantic partners. They're just not interested. They don't have a desire for sex with that partner. So all that complexity of what forms our romantic and sexual lives, that's why we need more research, but we also need to talk openly, like you're letting us do here, to think and talk openly about our intimate lives with each other, with ourselves.
And however we choose to express that gets to be okay.
Yeah.
Right? That nobody gets to legislate that. I think that that's super important, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. It's freeing and it's associated with our well-being. It's associated with our health. And it also, one of the things that Dr. Kinsey was doing in the 1940s, a question he was often asked is people would say, am I normal? And what he found in the studies and his colleagues found is that there's so much variation. What is normal? It's a term that we don't use here at the Kinsey Institute. We don't always say, we'll talk about statistical normality in terms of like averages, but we don't talk about normal. We talk about consent. We talk about absolutely. Yeah. We have a big research initiative on sexual violence. We talk about what could maybe hurt or betray people, what's associated with satisfaction. But in terms of the question of what's normal, there's so much variation in what people's romantic and sexual lives look like and feel like. There's no right answer for people. It's what works for them, what brings them joy and satisfaction. But to be freed to pursue that, to say what you like, you know, it's as long as you're not harming anyone, as long as it's consensual, that we all have desires and that we should feel comfortable and feel that we have the knowledge to pursue them is a great thing.
And the word desire, we're out of time, but just to like to sort of end it with that word desire, you know, that we all have it, right? And to have the liberation and freedom to pursue that desire is happiness, not at somebody else's expense, right? That's not what we're talking about.
Mm-hmm. That's exactly right. I love, well said.
Yeah. We're going to do more of this because I think as the world gets crazier and crazier, we probably need to talk more and more and more about sex and help people be educated about ways to have more sex, to stay healthy and vital and live, you know, prosperous, meaningful lives. I mean, I think this ties into the whole thing, what it's all about.
Yeah. I love it. What it means to be happy.
What it means to be happy. To learn more about Dr. Justin Garcia and his work, please go to thekinseyinstitute.org. You can find the Kinsey Institute on X at Kinsey Institute. And on Instagram, you can look up Dr. Justin Garcia at Dr. Justin Garcia and at Kinsey Institute. Justin, please come back.
Yes, I would love to. Thank you so much for having me.
Thanks for joining us on Harvesting Happiness today. This is Lisa Cypress-Kamen on behalf of my guest, Dr. Justin Garcia, wishing you kind thoughts, kinder words, and the kindest of actions. Until next time, remember, happiness is an inside job. Happiness is your inside job. Please go out and rock your day and remember to be kind to one another. Want to take a deeper dive into sound ideas for better well-being? Check out our new bonus edition content, More Mental Fitness by Harvesting Happiness, available exclusively on Medium and Substack. Keep harvesting your own happiness anytime, anywhere, from the comfort of wherever you are. Subscribe, listen, and share hundreds of downloadable episodes from wherever you get your podcasts. Connect with and follow us on most social media channels. To learn more about lifestyle management and mental fitness consulting services, please visit harvestinghappiness.com. Harvesting Happiness and More Mental Fitness are produced by me, Lisa Cypress-Kamen, Andrea Mengele, Robin Boyd, Andrea Daly, and the awesome team at Podfly Productions, including Eric Begay, Kimberly Beck, and Alec Guess, in collaboration with TogiNet Radio, KBUU, RadioMalibu.net, and is available on PRX, the Public Radio Exchange.